to order the meeting of the Safety and Security Committee.
Attention, everyone. We're ready to start.
Ready, fire, aim.
Attention on deck. Thank you. As we get started, could I have a motion for approval of the agenda? Anybody have comments on the agenda? Motion made. Motion made and looking for a second.
Second.
Any objection to the agenda? If not, we'll move on that basis. And could I have a motion for approval of the minutes?
So moved.
Thanks. Second. Any changes or concerns about the minutes? If not, the minutes are adopted. We have two information items for today's discussion, and in addition, reports regarding two recent safety-related incidents. Concerning the incidents, we will receive an update from Rob Troop about the staircase intrusion into the track bed at Rhode Island Avenue, how that happened and what is being done in the future. And Chief Safety Officer Doherty will provide a report of his investigation and review concerning rail car intercoms. And finally, as we do each quarter, we will hear from Mr. Benton, who will share with us the TOCS quarterly report and suggestions as to how we can continue the progress we've been making. But first, I want to turn it over to Chief Pavlik to brief us on the Youth Safety Outreach, which is a campaign developed here but in cooperation with others to minimize disruptions and to improve system security by actively engaging our youthful riders into responsible citizenship and responsible and respectful use of the system.
Good morning, Mr. Downing, members of the board. Yeah, we're here today to talk about our youth safety outreach initiative. And basically what we're doing is we're trying to promote youth safety and proper youth behavior. We want to encourage it through a multiple of different ways. We've established focus groups here in the National Capital Region where the youth are actively engaged and participating. We partner with our own internal customer service communication and marketing team, and together we've developed this initiative and this outreach that we're moving forward with. The background, as a chief of police, I've heard it from customers and I've heard it from fellow employees, is, Chief, why don't you just arrest all the youth and deal with it that way? And it's not an effective tool. Truth be told, you know, I kind of wear a dual hat here. As a father, I see it as it's a youth, you know, they've been in a sterile classroom environment for 7, 8, 9 hours a day, and METS is really their first release of all that built-up energy they've had throughout the day. Most of the behavior that they exhibit sometimes is just simple kids being kids. If you saw this type of behavior out on the playground on our city street corner, you wouldn't give it a second opinion. But when that environment is in a transit environment, it sometimes compounds, and these outbursts sometimes get violent and crosses a different line. So that's where definitely when a criminal activity occurs is where the police definitely take a very finite role in our roles and responsibilities. Sometimes they get sensationalized through social media outlets, and that's where the transit police plays a very unique role in dealing with that. So we're continuing our partnership with the schools. It's important that we do that. It's important that we understand the concerns and the issues that the youth may have and listen to what their message is and how they respect our customers and how we respect our youth. It's that portrayal of behavior, though, that sometimes that disrupts the quality of life and our customers and the kind of experience that our employees are subject to. So we've partnered with, again, with our own internal team. We developed this new program, this new initiative we want to start out. Elizabeth Katana, who's seated to my left, we brought her on as one of our best aides, I guess. She's been through this through thick and thin. She's established all the focus groups for me. She's a recent graduate with a master's degree in criminology from the University of Pennsylvania. At this point in time, I'm going to turn it over to her and let her talk a little bit more about the program itself.
Thank you, Chief Pavlik, Mr. Chairman, board members, good morning. The findings from the focus groups were very informative, and we felt the best way to address them was to engage young people from areas where incidents have been reported. Therefore, in December, Metro held its first youth forum. We invited participants from the Youth Transit Town Hall held by the Riders Advisory Council in 2012, as well as students from District of Columbia Public Schools. The forum served as a platform for young riders to be creative and to express their ideas on how to encourage safe behavior among their peers. We heard numerous suggestions, but the two most common were to create a safety campaign for youth. And they wanted it to come from their own voice, because as we heard from the focus group research, that messages from authority figures just don't work. The second item that they recommended was to have officers conduct public presentations in schools. The youth group continued to convene three more times throughout the academic year, and they worked with Metro to create a safety campaign for youth by youth. They chose the tagline, "Respect Your Ride." Ms. Jo Green, the director of marketing, attended the forums and heard their input on color scheme, designs, and promotional items. Recommendations including attaching this tagline on sunglasses and lanyards, which I actually have and will pass out at this moment. Metro's Young Riders will promote this message at community events and online via social media with a designated Twitter hashtag. The first community event for the Respect Your Ride campaign occurred on June 27th at the Anti-Violence Youth Summit, which was attended by more than 500 youth. At the summit, Metro had a table staffed by both transit officers and a bus operator. Any youth who visited us and answered one of our Metro trivia questions received a free pair of those sunglasses. In no time, we quickly became the most popular table there. We even had some youth stick around just wanting additional questions to test their Metro knowledge. The interaction was positive and outside of how they normally see Metro, which is just buses and trains. Events such as these allow young riders to engage with our operators and officers in a fun and relaxed setting. The young people have been involved at all stages of this campaign, from creation to promotion. Next slide, please. And those who do go out and perform peer-to-peer outreach will wear this t-shirt, designed from the feedback we've received at the forum. In the fall, students will be able to see this design on posters in their schools, as well as be able to sign up for the Respect Your Ride pledge card, which is on the bottom right-hand side of the screen. The pledge, which was also written by Metro's youth group, demonstrates mutual respect between youth and riders and employees. It's simple, short, and effectively communicates the message of a safe and respectful ride, which we all wish to have. It also speaks to the negative labels that we've heard from the focus group research. Youth projected a combative attitude towards Metro because they felt they were victims of preconceived labels. We hope that this pledge changes that mindset. The plan is to hold school assemblies in the fall where the students can sign up for the pledge. Upon joining, cardholders will be able to take advantage of giveaways and discounts at local stores, such as the mall at Prince George's. Additional school outreach was the second action item that came out of the forum. Since then, transit officers have visited 7 middle and high school students, presenting to more than 1,600 students within the District of Columbia, talking about safety and crime prevention. The discussions afforded the students to speak openly about their ridership experiences. And it was great to hear how much they actually know about Metro safety, because it varied. It ranged from never having heard of the third rail to actually having some students recite the entire Metro Transit police number because they heard it so many times in the system. I've also heard from the officers that have benefited from the visits as well. They talked to me about they were able to share with the youth the incidents that they see daily, encouraging mutual understanding from both parties. In March, Transit Police collaborated with the DC Youth Advisory Council to hold the Mayor's Youth Town Hall right here at the Jackson Graham Building. The topic of the town hall was youth safety with a specific focus on Metro. Students from elementary to high school attended, and they heard from Mayor Vincent Gray as well as Chief Pavlik. Metro will continue to work with its young riders to communicate a safety message that is both fun and youthful, a message that they are proud to own and represent every time they're out with their group of friends in the system. At this moment, I will now turn it back to Chief Pavlik to discuss the next steps of our outreach efforts.
I just want to provide a brief summary of our next steps and some of the stuff we're currently doing. The Metropolitan Police Department is our biggest joint player in this program. I meet with them and Chief Lanier on a regular basis to talk about different initiatives we're working on. Part of it, she initiated a summer crime initiative as well as a curfew initiative that we partner with them on. And basically, the curfew initiative is to try to encourage young riders to not be out at the late hours and enforce the curfew statute within the District of Columbia. We're also in the middle of crafting a letter that will go in the school packets back to the different schools when school starts. So when the District of Columbia mails out their packets to the youth, inside will be a letter on behalf of Metro that talks about this campaign and talks about expectations of youth behavior while using our system. We're going to continue to target key schools. We can't participate in every back-to-school night, but we are actively engaged in the schools of interest and the schools that really want to partner with the transit police and their administration staff. So we are going to partner on the back-to-school nights as they approach. And in those initiatives, we bring not only Metro Transit police officers, but Metro employees to include bus operators, because sometimes it's the voice of the operator, the station manager also, that resonates well with the youth. Also coming on the horizon, our National Night Out. National Night Out is August 6th, and that's a national-wide event where all law enforcement stand up various awareness campaigns and things for that particular night in question. We're also looking at avenues with radio ads, back-to-school nights with both Prince George's County and the District of Columbia, and our goal is to recruit at least 1,000 youth who will commit to this pledge as we move forward. I'd also be remiss if I didn't thank Ms. Bowser and Ms. Hampshire and the Rise Advisory Council for their support thus far. This is a very fluid initiative. We'll make adjustments as we see fit going on throughout the school year. And at this time, I take any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chief, this sounds like an interesting, intriguing, and perhaps a novel program. Two questions for you. First, is this just focused on the summer and the back-to-school period in September, or is this a program that you're contemplating will continue through the whole fiscal year, through the whole school year, and be repeated in future years? Second question is, how are you going to measure success? What's the metric, if you thought about it, that you're going to use to determine whether the program is successful in reducing something? And the question is, what is it that you're trying to reduce, and how are you going to measure it?
Yeah, as far as it's an all-year-long program, we're going to kick it off at the beginning of the school year. The summer crime initiative are things we're doing now, but this program is something we'll go with the new calendar school year this year. I think we'll measure success really from our voices of our customers or employees. I don't know if quantitatively we're going to be able to measure our success as far as, say, a reduction maybe in youth offenses or youth arrests. That's some area that we will definitely consider. But I think most of the feedback we'll get will be the positive feedback that we hope to get from our customers and the positive feedback from our own Metro employees.
I would just encourage you to try and come up with some metric so that when you come back a year from now, or as we go through the budget cycle in the fall, we have some way to measure whether this is something that should be continued.
Sir.
And I know that Mrs. Bowser has been very interested in this. I just wanted to point out that in D.C., the public schools, as you probably know, have a photo ID, and that's going to get extended to the charter schools. Once that happens, you all should have, and the Metropolitan Police Department should have, an improved identification system with respect to D.C. Students. And if they are inappropriately acting up, their privileges of riding for free could be suspended. I don't know if you knew that.
Yes.
Okay.
Other questions?
Yes, once again, a very outstanding report. Question is, and is the focus just solely going to be right now initially and primarily on the district of Puget County as opposed to system-wide?
It is a system-wide initiative, but when we look at our activities and the number of youth that we deal with. The District of Columbia is very unique, and they use, you know, the metro system as their primary means of transportation to and from school or school activities, where in other jurisdictions they have a dedicated bus system to travel with. So initially it is going to focus primarily on District of Columbia and Prince George's County, and then as need be foster it out to the entire system.
Okay, thank you.
In response to Mr. Yule's question, I think it is an important part. We start thinking of this as a larger piece. I think that there's two things there. One, we want our youth to grow and become transit riders, and the best way to do so is to start out. I know Arlington has had at one point had a curriculum item that was there. but we also see these youth on after hours, not just going back and forth to school, but they're using the system for a recreational or a personal time. So I wouldn't say that it's where we need to be now, but I hope that we'll think about how else we want to be able to serve, because I think that's a very critical population that we want to be able to continue to serve.
Any other questions? Keep us posted on how it's going. It's a great initiative.
Mr. Troop, Rhode Island Avenue.
I'll go ahead and get the PowerPoint. Good morning, Mr. Downey and members of the board. Certainly, I appreciate the opportunity to present two incident information reports. The first concerns an incident where a train came into contact with one of the platform to wayside access stairs, and the other being an update on inoperable intercoms. The incident with the metal staircase occurred on June 14th and was in the vicinity of the Rhode Island Avenue station. The immediate notification protocol for disabled trains went into effect, and within 12 minutes of the initial report of the incident, we had Metro Police personnel aboard the train to effect and facilitate an offload of passengers. In addition, all appropriate departments were notified, including the Tri-State Oversight Committee. The contact with the staircase resulted in a loss of train power, which required an offload of passengers onto a rescue train. This was done in an orderly manner and without injury to any passenger, though one passenger was transported for anxiety. Obviously, we appreciate the cooperation of passengers in situations such as this, and this allows us to reaccommodate them and return to service more efficiently. Upon investigation, we discovered that the bolts which secure the staircase to a metal U-channel base were corroded, and the stairs moved off of the base and obstructed the dynamic envelope. The dynamic envelope is any encroachment onto the right-of-way within the clearance area of the train. And this resulted in the train striking the staircase. Subsequent to the incident, we've inspected all staircase locations and installations throughout the system, both in the underground and also the above-ground stations. The maintenance teams, through inspections, have prioritized repairs, but it should be noted that no installations were found which required immediate remediation. In addition, the station inspection report will include the stair structure as part of the repair inspection process, and all of this will be tracked through our Maximo maintenance system. Structure engineers are also looking at other components along the right-of-way which could violate the dynamic envelope, and including these within the inspection cycle as well. These items include things such as hatch doors, tunnel junction boxes, handrails, those types of items. This comprehensive evaluation and continuing inspection cycle will eliminate similar type incidents from occurring. Thank you, and if there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Do you have any questions? And I'm struck by the fact Rhode Island Avenue is the oldest station in the system. If it happened there over time, it could happen at other places. So it's part of the cycle we've got to work through. Exactly. Other questions?
Yes. For a number of years, the authority used salt on the icing platform, which for elevated structures is the metal component that's usually semi-heated.
There's a small contributing factor. I think mostly this just deals with age, the type of system that we have, you know, where it is. I think it's a small contributing factor. So.
Any other questions? If not, we'll turn to both of you on the intercom.
Okay. At this point, we'd like to talk about our current efforts concerning correction of intercom incompatibility between the 6,000 series car and the 1,000 and 4,000 series, respectively. Currently, the intercom issues between the 1,000 series and 6,000 series have been rectified with circuit board revisions to all of the 6,000 series, which was engineered to correct the subject deficiency. This included the replacement of a resistor within the circuit card, and again, I am pleased to report that all cars have been provided with that specific fix. An engineering solution for the compatibility between the 6,000 and 4,000 series has been developed and is being tested. The expectation is that this will require 2 weeks to a month of full testing of field service, and it should take approximately 2 months to complete once it has been verified and approved for full-scale production. WMATA personnel became aware of problems with intercom reliability in the 6000 series cars back in late 2009. Through numerous reports over a span of time, we were able to realize that with the 6000 series in the lead, some consists could not communicate to the lead car via the intercom. Although it was not consistently a mixed fleet issue, nor did it present itself on every occasion. As part of an overall radio upgrade, new digital communication control panels were to be installed in the 1000 series cars, and at that time it was determined that that would remedy any of the interface issues. Subsequent testing with the new panels revealed that this was not the case, and it was also decided that the new digital radio panels would not be installed in the 1000 series car, as it was determined to permanently belly those cars within the consist. During this period, there's renewed effort in closing NTSB recommendations. These included items such as rollback protection, installing exterior door handles, and we had other safety campaigns as well outside of the normal NTSB recommendations. And these were programmatic investigations into wrong side door openings and the subsequent engineering modifications with those. The intercom reliability concerns were managed against these other safety initiatives. In the latter part of 2012, engineering renewed efforts to determine cause of inconsistencies in the intercom performance. Engineering investigation, design changes, and testing were progressed to where we understood systemic issues and permanent engineering modification instructions were approved in April of 2013. Full-scale deployment of those changes on the 6000 were scheduled to occur over the next several months. Now, the GM became aware of the systemic issues as a result of the recent incident on June 17th at Woodley Park, where riders were unable to confirm communication with the train operator. They concluded that we could sustain specific consist configurations to reduce the problem while expediting the repairs on the 6000, and ordered those specific actions, including a review by SAFE of the intercom interface issues. In addition, our daily safety test has been reevaluated to include audits to ensure end-to-end communications. Intercom checks occur only on the lead car currently. We begin auditing to allow for specific random testing of car-to-lead intercom verification. As stated earlier, the configurations with the 4000 series will be deployed and tested, and once the engineering modification is approved for full build-out, we will expedite repairs on those cars. However, during this time, we will manage the configuration of the consist to exclude 6000 series cars in the lead with the 4000 in the consist. In addition to these, we have identified problems with the new digital communication control panels on the 2, 3K, and the 5K cars, where nuisance alarms are being generated through the intercom, and these require a reset of the intercom button. Specific instructions have been presented to our train operators to manage this situation. All of the changes in designs, processes, schedules, and tests are being closely coordinated with Jim's safety group, and I'd like to turn it over to him now.
Thank you, Mr. Troop, and good morning again, Chairman Downey and members of the board. The safety department, as directed by the general manager, conducted a review of the rail car intercom system concern. This investigation reviewed the timeline, rail car modifications, current standards, engineering protocols, as well as performing a hazard analysis following our hazard management program, and finally, recommendations to help mitigate the failures. We conducted a couple random surveys. This was to spot check the onboard intercoms. We'd already conducted some spot checks during April 2013 at my request. During the month of April, these checks were performed on 6 different days, 23 train consists, and 154 rail cars. The results that we found were 15 trouble events. This included 5 that just dealt with labeling issues, or 9.7% trouble concerns, and this was with the 6K, 1K consists. A follow-up check was conducted in June 2013 on 2 different days after the 1K cars were no longer paired with the 6K cars. During this survey, 74 train consists with 407 rail cars were checked, and we identified 7 trouble issues, or 1.7%, and this included such things as a garbled PA, the intercom inoperable, or signs and placards that needed repaired. And we did find one intercom that had been disabled. We looked at some of the standards and recommendations, and from what was actually said in the National Fire Protection Association, is that vehicles shall be equipped with a communications system consisting of the following. And the one point is, at the option of the authority, a device can be installed to be used by passengers to alert the operator in the event of an emergency, and that's both in the 2003 and 2010 edition. We even looked at the APTA standard, which APTA being a recommendation, and there's an excerpt that reads, new rail transit vehicles shall be equipped with an intercom that provides a means for passengers and crew members to communicate with one another in an emergency situation, and this document was published actually in December 2012. So, relatively recent document. We conducted a hazard analysis, and I think it's important to remind you that the hazard analysis looks at the hazard on a system-wide basis. And the hazard analysis process resulted in a categorization of a 3D rating, or marginal, 3 for severity, and D, or remote, for probability occurrence. This categorization indicates the item is acceptable with Executive Safety Committee review. The process is derived based on the military standard 882C, which is the, which is our hazard management program is built upon. However, once we identified this failure as a system-wide failure versus an intermittent component failure, it was and is being treated and addressed as a serious issue. Our findings that we were asked also by the general manager to look at as a timeline was based on our investigation and the hazard rating of a 3D. WMATA staff appropriately responded to, investigated, and began mitigation efforts considering higher competing priorities while work continued to identify the cause of the intermittent intercom issue. Other safety critical work, including the corrective actions recommended by the National Transportation Safety Board, Federal Transit Administration, Tri-State Oversight Committee, were accelerated based on hazard analysis. However, as Mr. Troop noted, in some instances, we identified that operators were disabling the intercom because of the noise and the feedback issue. We've developed 5 recommendations for mitigation. 1, complete the engineering modification instruction on the 6,000 series cars. 2, complete an audit procedure to conduct sample train line testing of the intercoms. 3, avoid mixing the 4,000 series cars in consist with 6,000 series until the issue is resolved. 4, to implement a process within the Maxima, which is our work order system, and the safety measurement system, whereby a special identifying code flags a potential engineering safety issue, similar to the FLS code or the fire life safety code that we already have in place. And last is issue a bulletin for train operators to stop disabling the intercoms. And this concludes my report, and I'm happy to take any questions from the board. Thank you.
Thank you both. I have a couple of questions, and then others may as well. Most recently, came to my attention that this condition had been noted in 2009, and the authority issued a press release and said we will be dealing with it. This kind of reminds me of the old WMATA, issue the press release but don't deliver the results. I know we have changed that, and I'm not suggesting that that's still the case. But I am concerned that I don't believe this condition that had been noted 4 years ago ever made it into the safety management system. So there was no corrective action plan on the books to say this had been diagnosed and we're dealing with it. I can agree that it might be a lower priority than other things that we had to deal with, but in effect, from our standpoint, we didn't know it was supposed to be dealt with. If you weren't here at the time, if you hadn't read this press release, you would not know that this was part of the agenda. That concerns me. Could I be certain that if a situation like this were identified today, it would go into the system?
We're working on developing that, so we have implemented. And as you stated, we didn't even have a safety measurement system.
I know where we were. I just want to be sure that that's not where we are now.
And I believe certainly similar that if a safety issue is raised, it will come to our attention, but we're wanting to get it to where it's actually in our different databases,
right.
So that we
know,
have
unless,
that.
Unless it's been identified, we don't know it exists. Once it's identified, we rely on the reporting to say it's being dealt with. So reporting is critical importance to me, and I'm sure to other board members.
Correct.
And also to that end, Mr. Downey, I think, you know, we have revised a lot of the procedures since 2009,
right.
Not just in the safety measurement system, but also in how engineering modification instructions are approved, and also how engineering test procedures are approved, so that safety sees everything on those. So we have the checks and balances that if for some reason it was not to get into the safety measurement system, we do have the checks and balances that it is put forward and being able to look at by safety.
Good. I mean, that's the way it should be. Let me just ask whether, to your knowledge, there are any other pre-existing conditions that are known but never have made it into the system. And we have a couple of months before our next meeting. I'd like to know that those would also find their way in. If they don't and show up later as pre-existing conditions, would not be treated very
right now
friendly.
We do not know of any pre-existing conditions.
Right.
That
that's the problem. You don't know what you don't know, but somebody may know of things.
Mm-hmm.
Tell them there's an amnesty period to come in and let us know.
I will. And we are having staff in the engineering, both on the vehicle side and on the infrastructure side, reviewing all those items as well. So currently we have not identified any.
Thank you. My other concern, which I think you've answered, Mr. Doherty, I knew from a couple of months ago that one of the mitigations was to be going out and doing tests. And I had assumed, I hadn't heard that any tests had been failed, the problem didn't exist. You're telling me we did go out, we did do the tests, we discovered that there still were significant problems, and we're working through the issue.
That's true. Starting in April, we actually
right.
began.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Yes.
How does the train operator turn the intercom system off? Is there a switch or a button?
No, sir. They actually, go ahead.
I'm sorry. They can manually manipulate the button to keep it depressed. They can manually manipulate the button to keep it depressed. They can put something in to keep it depressed.
In the front?
Within the intercom system itself, yes. In the
console?
In
the cabin?
In the console, that's correct, yes. Yes.
Like what? Like tape or clip?
Yeah.
Or
yeah, something like that. Something like
really?
That.
I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that was possible.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, if I understood Mr. Troop's oral report correctly, you now have a fix for solving the problem on trains with the 6,000 and 1,000 cars, and you've implemented the fix, correct?
Yes, that is correct, yes.
Now, going forward, and now the question is directed to both of you, what is the program for testing to make sure that it works going forward on trains, and you could you discuss exactly what is the timing, how often you're going to do testing, and second, what is the exact test that you're going to implement to make sure that someone at one point pressing a button can communicate with the train operator at another point in the train?
What I would say is what we're doing is we're going to develop an audit system through our QAW group that will go out and audit the test, do an end-to-end car test. We have as yet not developed the specific procedures behind that, so the frequency of the test, but it will be based on the auditing standards to be able to capture, you know, the correct random amount within those specific consists as well. So that procedure is being developed, and we will have that done probably within a week. So we are progressing that. So that's how we'll do it. We'll capture that through an auditing.
So the testing should begin by the beginning of August at the latest?
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
And who will do the testing, people in your shop or people in safety?
We haven't defined that as yet. We'll probably be a combination of both, actually. The majority of the testing will be done by our QAW people, which is a separate entity from CMNT or car maintenance or car vehicle engineering. We have our QAW group, which will do that. And I'm sure Mr. Doherty's group will also perform periodic tests on those.
Could you send us something in writing when
yes,
you
absolutely.
Have audit ready and when the first mm-hmm. testing will occur?
Sure.
Thank you.
And Mr. Troop summarized that pretty well. They'll do their testing, and then we will do, you know, some monitoring, auditing alongside of them and independently.
I don't want to belabor the point, but part of root cause analysis is not just the technical, it's the human systems part of looking at issues. Mr. Downey's right to point out that we had a press release in 09 saying that we had a problem, we're fixing it, it's going to be fixed right away. There was a human systems failure there, and it lasted until this last round of investigations this year. It's important to understand how that happened. It's perhaps a partial failure in the culture, and it's part of training. It's part of recognizing without blame a process that should have worked better. And part of what I think we all have a expectation about is that we look at those communication and human system failures as well as the technical failures. And I know that in a brief conversation with the general manager, he had voiced a similar concern, and I hope that part of this process is a candid, not blame-oriented look backwards from that point in time in 09 to now, and see what happened and if there are lessons to be learned from that.
Yeah, I haven't totally completed my review of the reports yet, but my after initial review, you have to look in time what you're looking at and what was going on. A, we didn't have the whole hazard management system at that point, but I still wanted to look at were people making reasonable prioritization decisions. 2009, the NTSB recommendations, safety critical items that had to be addressed, including the engineering and going out for bids on 7,000 series cars to replace the 1,000. Very intense amount of engineering work has to go on with that. We had the rollback, we had the door operator. These are very high priority items. And I will say, and borne out by the more recent hazard analysis, clearly higher and more critical than this. So I think that while nothing is ever perfect, the focus at that time was on the most safety critical items with regard to the car. As they got through that, eventually, as Rob mentioned before, it picked up this item again and addressed it in a more structured, disciplined way, which we've approached now, we've gotten a lot better at, that would have been more evident. But the results, I'm not sure, would have been different in terms of timing because where you want to put your resources to identify the most safety critical and solve those safety critical items, which you've gone through over the last 2 or 3 years.
I would agree that might be the decision that we would agree to, but if we didn't know it was being made, right.
I just wanted to go back to Mr. Downey's point of, and I think you covered it, but I want to make sure I'm understanding that we will be able to capture anything that was perceived to have been a safety issue before during that time. And particularly the little things that mount to large things and how you will be able to accomplish that. Because I agree that without a system in place before, you are looking backward at something that does not exist. But there has to be a way to look back at what we see in the cars, for example, at the train operator's console, how it's working today and how it should be working in a safe operation. So that's, I want the clarity that is what we're looking at and that whatever that is going to come back to us.
It's certainly our intent, and that's what we're planning on doing. We're going back through, I'll say for lack of a better term, may not seem that historical, but data that has been available. The automation or the SMS and the Maximo, those are the systems, but we rely on also our employees in local safety committee meetings and other meetings like that to bring things forward because the opportunity certainly, exists, but we do need folks to bring that forward, and we're going back, with the operations group and looking at any historical potential safety issues that may have been brought to our attention or that actually didn't rise to the right level. So that's what we're looking at doing, and certainly our desire to catch 100%, but we're not sure that we can get it 100%, but we're going to do our best.
I is the message that we have gone to our employees to me, it's sort of that higher alert piece now to say, you know, this was an error. It was an overlooked error. We are looking for their voices to really help, because that's really where it's going to come from, and this is the piece that you need to see.
Ms. Hodgins, absolutely. I think one of the things that we, first of all, the engineering and operations group has a very good relationship with safety. Any incident that occurs, regardless of what it is, we contact safety and bring them into, you know, to make discovery of what the situation was. In addition, like I said, all engineering modification instructions, EETP, we have constant communication with them. Because that's a critical piece, as Mr. Daugherty mentioned. You know, it's not just the fact that we're putting this information to SMS, you know, or hazard management system to be able to flag it and look at it, but it's the fact that we're having continual conversations, you know, in that regard. So looking historically, you know, because, you know, anything that may have happened historically, because they are involved in us with the CAP process and looking at things and the engineering modification instructions, they're coming up to speed with any of the historical items. Moving forward, obviously, like I said, we have regular CAP meetings with them. We have the engineering modification instructions, all these different things. So we have very good lines of communications. And staff understands as well that, you know, if you're going to err, you err on the side of caution. You know, if you think it's a safety issue, it probably is. So we have those conversations early and often with safety on that. And again, you know, the human element is absolutely critical in this, and having people aware that we're partners in this, you know. So that's one of the most critical pieces.
Yeah, thank you. Don't want to put a damper on this particular topic, but it's somewhat interrelated, and that is the PA system on the cars in general. There have been times I've been on the train and you can be in one car and it's, you know, it's full and you can hear clearly what's been enunciated. You can be on another car and you can't hear anything. You don't even know what stop or station you're at or anything. And I'm assuming the train engineer is communicating and saying something, but you just can't hear. And there are times I've sat on the train and when I'm on a car and I'll text back to Richard or to the board in general and say, I was on this train and at 11 o'clock and p.m. and I can't, you know, you can't hear communication. And so I'm wondering what, while we're going through all this with the intercoms, what are we doing to address, you know, the PA system holistically through, you know, the train cars themselves? To me, that's probably more important than the intercom.
We have a comprehensive approach, obviously, to taking care of all the items that come to our attention. We appreciate absolutely customer feedback on cars. All those cars then are investigated, you know, as part of the maintenance item when they're brought into their shop, they're investigated. You know, we go through a regular cycle to make sure that those, you know, regular maintenance cycle to make sure that the intercom is, there's preventive maintenance that's done on those. You know, obviously we do have old cars. We have cars that are over 30 years old, and, you know, it is problematic to maintain them to a high degree level, particularly on the intercom systems. So, you know, we look at those cars, we look at those specific incidents, and we get reports of them. Each report that we get from a passenger or a rider is looked at for those specific cars to try to get them on the line. Because I agree with you, it is important to have the intercom, you know, working. Or the PA, excuse me.
Thank you for the presentation. Getting to where we need to get in the safety arena is a learning process. We all have to learn from what's happened in the past, modify, and move forward. I think this is a good opportunity to have done that, and appreciate your candor on where we are. Mr. Benton.
I know we're running short on time. Okay, and many of the topics that I have to discuss have been discussed here by Mr. Troop and Mr. Daugherty. So I would just like to thank their support since April 2nd when we brought this to the Safety Department's attention, that they've come to the resolution that they now have in such a quick fashion. So we can't really speak for what happened in 2009, but as of today, we're getting results from the requests that we've made. And we appreciate that. Under the general summary, we talk about the caps that we're getting closed out and the support that we receive from WMATA in overseeing the projects and the system on a day-to-day basis. Next slide. Such as the recent rule compliance study that we performed and the results on that, some of our recommendations that have been implemented and are currently being reviewed for implementation. Some of the advances we made in the way we approach CAPS, where we get regular updates and the reports that go out to the board members are a little bit more easily read and understood on where the CAP is in the process of getting closed out. And that continuing on. Next slide. The accident incidents that do occur, they do get resolved in a timely fashion, get reported to us in a timely fashion. We adopt them when we agree with all the findings and recommendations that they make to ensure that these types of incidents don't happen in the future. The Rhode Island Avenue Station, you heard from Mr. Troop, and we're going to currently review or in the future when we get the final report on that. One of our recommendations was is when that incident happened, we were right on with them, and they were in step with us that the whole system had to be checked. You can't just rely on that one step. So they did go out and review the entire system to ensure that that type of incident wouldn't happen. And steps will be taken on the inspection process to ensure that that doesn't happen from now on. The Silver Spring Collector cable fire, I think you were briefed last time on that by Mr. Troop, and the steps that were taken to mitigate that hazard from happening again. The cable was wrapped with additional insulation so that there would be no more, and I think some brackets were repositioned so that that incident wouldn't happen again. Next one. Red signal violations, we're constantly in monitoring the red signal violations and looking into that. We're a little concerned with the number of incidents that have happened in the last couple months, and I know there has been recommendations made for additional signage for the operators, positioning of signals in certain situations where they're more clear for the operator that they can't go on.
We were briefed on that last month, so
yes,
we're
you were.
Very
yes,
much
you
aware
were.
Of it and expecting to hear what's being done and what improvements are occurring.
And we'll monitor the results and the effectiveness of these recommendations, and if changes need to be made, we'll recommend certain changes and continue on from there. We have received reports from patrons on non-responsiveness from station managers regarding security concerns or incidents where so we're looking into the training that's being supplied to those station managers and some of the security concerns. As you heard, the youth initiatives are being undertaken to try to alleviate some of these types of security incidents. The passenger intercoms, we went through that, and I don't think there's too much else to talk about the passenger intercom, but again, we appreciate the response that was made since our April 2nd request on that. We have been constantly updated on these fixes. We got a written response May 2nd, and we've been getting verbal responses since then. So that's been good. As Mr. Yuli indicated, the PA system review that we're currently doing, because we have similar concerns, that the passenger intercom is problematic, but the public address system is also a necessity in certain emergencies. We're currently going through the system. We're going to supply a report on our findings. Just the other day, I went out and I checked five individual cars, and it seemed like one operator, his voice was at the same level as when the automatic announcement comes on and says, stand back, doors are closing. Well, he's making his announcement at the same exact time, and you couldn't hear what he was saying. That's more of a customer service problem, but there was another car that I went on, and the PA was not operating at all. So I reported that, and safety took care of it, and it was repaired immediately. So these are kind of incidents that we're concerned with as well, and we will be looking into to supply a report to a model on our findings. Because the public address system is a key vital component of an emergency announcements that need to be made for public awareness. So We are looking into that. Emergency trip station boxes, we've addressed this with WMATA and Arkansas. Emergency trip station boxes, they're located, I believe it's every 800 feet throughout the system. They're identified by a blue light. We've noticed some cosmetic issues with this device. However, we've been assured that the functionality is total. If there was a functionality problem, there would be a person stationed at that device to ensure that power could be brought down.
So this is where the power can be shut off.
This is where the power can be shut off.
Locally, as opposed to.
Around. So we're looking into that, and we may go out and look at some of the periodic inspections on that device to ensure that they are functional. Internal audits, I believe this is part of the safety culture that's going on these days. The internal audit program is very good here at WMATA since I have been here. And the public relations, procurement, storerooms, material logistics audits have been performed by WMATA. And final reports have been received for each of these reviews. One additional audit has been scheduled, and TOC would welcome WMATA efforts on the security side to join us in our external audits coming up. We're doing an external security audit. It's July 26th, that time frame area, and we're looking forward to working with the MTPD to oversee the security side of the agency. Corrective action plans, there are 90 open caps, 42 caps have been closed since the last board presentation. This is currently, you know, a constant changing number. As the due to internal audits or incidents occur, caps will be open, caps will be closed. So this is an ongoing process, and we're quite pleased with the support that we get from WMATA on this as well. Capital projects, the 7,000 series trains, we're working with WMATA in the working group just to sort of oversee the process and ensure that safety certification occurs on these vehicles, as well as the Dulles and Silver Line projects. Next slide. Silver Line, we met with FTA yesterday, actually, to talk about the upcoming reviews that need to be performed as part of the safety certification process. And we'll be overseeing WMATA's portion of that and joining with them so that we can do it concurrently. FTA will also be there as well so that we can try to make this as efficient and effective as possible.
Mm-hmm. So, on the Silver Line opening, what's the latest timeline for that line to open?
That would be a question that I really personally would not be concerned with. It's that the safety certification gets before it opens. So whenever it gets turned over to WMATA, from that day on, the safety certification steps will have to be performed before it can open, whether that date is January 1st or June 26th. So, but the safety certification steps will have to be performed. We have triennial reviews coming up on the safety department, scheduled for the week of August 12th. We'll be performing that. So that'll be part of our ongoing triennial review, which we will be performing a different department probably every quarter, I think it is, approximately. Security, we have a document request for review of the safety emergency or security emergency preparedness plan, so we'll be doing that soon. Next. And we'll continue to work with WMATA to make sure that we do this without trying to create an audit fatigue situation and make sure that it does get done in the full effectiveness as well. Any questions?
Good morning, Mr. Benton. Good to see you again.
Good morning.
Can I take you back to slide 10, your discussion of the onboard PA system review?
Okay.
Could you just, you indicate that you're going to do your own study of that and provide some findings to WMATA. Can you just discuss what you anticipate will be the timeline for that study and when the report will be available to WMATA?
Actually, I believe the timeline is Friday. We're supposed to have our initial findings of the oversight of it. And at that point, it won't be a really inclusive, detailed report, but it'll be more of a report that says, safety department, you have a problem. Here's the evidence that we found. Can you either agree with this evidence and do your own, or show us how you can deny the evidence that we provided you? And at that point, just much like the request that we made to do the passenger intercoms, they will then go out and send their staff, which has a lot more resources to it, and do their own study, and then provide that back to us.
So there will effectively be two TOC reports. There'll be an initial written report, and then there'll be another report after you receive responses.
The initial report will be ours, and then from that point on, we'll oversee the WMATA report. So the second report would be the WMATA report, either agreeing with our findings or disagreeing with our findings.
And again, the date of that would be next Friday or this Friday, tomorrow? Or
tomorrow we will have preliminary numbers. We will try to get the report to WMATA on our findings as soon as possible.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
On the, going back to Silver Line, could you clarify for me where your interface with FTA fits? Is it at regional office, the PMO, or?
PMOC.
Largely through the PMOC?
Yes, we were with PMOC yesterday at their quarterly meeting for the Dulles Line, and we discussed with them our pre-revenue service review and their review as well.
And so those reports inside FTA then go up to the regional administrator and ultimately to the administrator?
Yes, our reports will, WMATA will, through their reports, will review the WMATA report to make sure that it encompasses all the elements that are required it to be have, as well as perform our own report and then submit that to the FTA.
And the FTA position is you have to be satisfied just as we have to be satisfied before the system goes into revenue service?
That is my understanding, yes.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Any other statements?
Okay. We all right?